from Psalm 62, the 62nd Psalm. Psalm 62. And reading from verse 1. Truly, my soul waiteth upon God. From him cometh my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. How long will ye imagine mischief against a man? Ye shall be slain, all of you. As a bowing wall shall ye be, and as a tottering fence. They only consult to cast him down from his excellency. They delight in lies. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Selah. My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times. Ye people, pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Selah. Surely, men of low degree are vanity, and men of high degree are a lie. To be led in the balance, they are altogether lighter than vanity. Trust not in oppression, and become not vain in robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart upon them. God hath spoken once, yea, twice have I heard this, that power belongeth unto God. Also unto thee, O Lord, belongeth mercy. For thou renderest to every man according to his work. We pray the Lord will bless the reading of this psalm this morning. If you want a text, there's some lovely texts in this psalm. The one that caught me best and most was that six words that commence in verse 8. Trust in him at all times. Trust in him at all times. Now that is said by a man who knew what he was talking about. A man who knows what he's talking about is worth listening to. And we'll see from this psalm that David knew all about trusting in him at all times. This psalm, there's no expression of fear or dejection, nor could you say there is prayer, though David does exhort the people to pour out their hearts before him. But David himself doesn't make any prayer. It's full of confidence and assurance. Yea, the perfection of faith is found in this psalm. I think it's Spurgeon that said this: true faith is always in season and under trial. And we're not told or given any historical setting for the psalm. We don't know exactly when this psalm was penned or what the circumstances were in David's life when he penned this psalm. But true faith is always in season. I believe you could call this psalm a psalm for all seasons. Any time in life or in any circumstance of life, we can certainly turn to a psalm like this one. Spurgeon again says that he's inclined to think of this psalm as the only psalm. The reason he says that is because of the occurrence of the word only. And maybe that is what has drawn me to this psalm today, in that if we were to try and establish when David penned this psalm, some say it was when he fled from Absalom. Others say it may be that occasion that we read of in 2 Samuel, the early chapters of 2 Samuel, maybe the first four chapters of 2 Samuel, the death of Saul and Jonathan. It's chapter 1 of 2 Samuel. And there's a period of upheaval at that time for the nation. Jonathan would have been the natural successor. But because they both died together, there was no obvious successor to Saul's throne. David has been hounded by Saul, and David establishes his anointed king in Judah. He's the king in waiting. The nation's divided. Saul over Israel, and David accepted in Judah, and he's based in Hebron. A man called Abner sets up Ishbosheth, a son of Saul, a weak man. And he seeks to keep the throne and the kingdom of Israel. And Abner is working and controlling things through this man, Ishbosheth. Joab is David's captain. And they're battling against each other. The nation's divided. They're squabbling amongst each other. Joab against Abner. The people of Israel against the people of Judah. In one of the battles when Joab and Judah prevailed, Abner flees. A brother of Joab goes after him, Asahel. When he catches up with them, he's taken by surprise. Abner, the older man, he seems to take him by surprise, and it says he speared him with the opposite end of his spear. One man's gone already. There's bloodshed. We then read where there is maneuvering, and that Abner then seeks to unite the kingdom. And so he sets Ishbosheth to one side, and he meets with David with a view to uniting the kingdom. Joab, no doubt at this stage, would think that in this new united kingdom, where's his position? Will he no longer be David's right-hand man, or will he be set to one side? He also wants to avenge the death of his brother. And we see so that he too treacherously organizes a meeting with Abner, and he slays Abner. And so it goes on. First four chapters of 2 Samuel. I couldn't help but think that when you read those chapters and you see the maneuverings of men seeking power, it's like the daily newspapers that we have been reading in recent days and reading of our politicians and the move and the maneuvering that goes on for men to claim power and possess power. And the similar language is used. I read the other day the word brutal was used of some of the maneuverings of men seeking power. And we hear of men falling on their swords, similar to the language of 2 Samuel. We hear of men being stabbed in the back. We read of treachery. David, in this circumstance, did David just not sit back and watch all these men and how they operated, did he not just sit back and say, truly, my soul waiteth upon God? And I couldn't help but think, you know, as God's people in the days in which we live, we're not looking to men. Not looking to men at all. European Union, in or out, we're not that concerned about that. Great Britain, that's not so great today. Not going to concern ourselves too much about that. A kingdom, is it united? Or talk about a united kingdom. Doesn't sound like it. I think we do well to look at Psalm 62. See what David had to say. He opens up with these words. Truly, only. In the original Hebrew text, apparently it's not so noticeable in our text. But verse 1 in Hebrew commences with the word only. Verse 5 in the original Hebrew text commences with the word only. Verse 9 in the Hebrew text, it's surely in our version. It's the word only each time. Spurgeon says this is the only psalm. We have only again in verse 2. He only is my rock. We have it again in verse 6. He only is my rock. Six times in all, the word only. And so Spurgeon says, I'm inclined to think of this psalm as the only psalm. In light of what's going on in our land and in our world or wherever, so much upheaval and tumult. We hear the words like, we need security and what we need is stable government. How often have you heard somebody say that? We need security. We need stability. Well, you'll find it in this psalm. You'll find it in the words of David. David says, trust in him at all times. And he opens up this psalm with this expression, truly, my soul waiteth upon God only. It begins only verse 1. It finishes at the end of verse 4 with the little word Selah, pause. Need to pause today. Then it opens up again in verse 5 with the word only, and it closes again at the end of verse 8 with the word pause, Selah. Calls for another pause. Then we have again verse 9 only, and it ends at the end of verse 12. And so we have 12 verses in the psalm that readily divide themselves into the three groups of four verses. I jotted down a couple of headings the other night, and it went like this. Verses 1 and 2, and I put the word truth. And then I looked at verses 3 and 4, and I put the word trials. And then I looked at 5 and 6, and I could see triumph. You boys that have been watching bands this week, don't panic. I don't have tricolor down here. Truth, verse 1 and 2. Trials, 3 and 4. Triumph, 5 and 6. Trust, 7 and 8. 9 and 10, I put trivia. Men of low degree are vanity. We're not going to get taken up with the men. 11 and 12, I could see tribute. Power belongeth unto God. And unto him, O Lord, belongeth mercy. Truth. Here's the opening verse. Here's the opening statement. Only my soul waiteth upon God. Another way you could translate that would be this. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. Where do you go today to find silence? Where do you go today to find time to wait? This opening expression, it asks for two things that are very difficult to find. Find a bit of silence. Background music, no matter where you go, calls for silence. And we have to wait. None of us have time to wait. So busy. The hustle and bustle of everyday life. So fast. Here, there, everywhere. The psalmist says, now hold on a moment. God alone, my soul waits in silence. It was lovely to hear two men in the opening prayers this morning in the prayer meeting, Richard and Richard McNabb, Brother Tom Geddes. They both used this expression of quietly waiting upon God. Psalmist says, God alone, my soul waits in silence. This is an exercise of the soul. This is spiritual exercise. This is the exercise that is the utmost requirement. Yes, physical exercise is important. But we must not neglect spiritual exercise. Recognizing our need of God. To wait in silence. Psalm 37 and verse 7. Similar words. Rest in the Lord. And wait patiently for him. That's the idea. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Two of the most difficult things to find. Time and quiet. An occasion to wait upon God. You know, I couldn't help but think, you know, that's as good a reason as any for trying to make, making that effort and trying to attend, certainly the prayer meeting. Where do you go to find peace and quiet? To lift your thoughts heavenward and to look to God, to wait upon God. Well, come to the prayer meeting. You might be late, you might rush to get here, but you'll still be there. It'll be worth it. We need to wait upon God on these days. Old man I used to enjoy listening to, hearing him pray in the prayer meeting, he often used the expression, and give thanks for this oasis in the wilderness. This green spot in the wilderness is how he called it. This occasion to wait upon God. We need to find it. Truly, my soul waiteth upon God. Only God. God alone. My soul waits in silence. From him cometh my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. You know, that leads us on to 3 and 4 that talks about the trials. We not only need to know God, we do well to remember and know something about ourselves, to know our weakness and to know our frailty, and to know how easy it is to fall and to falter. We need to know ourselves and we need to know our enemy. And here's an acknowledgement from the psalmist. He says, I shall not be greatly moved. What's he saying? I think he's saying and acknowledging and recognizing that I could be moved. And the world is shaking. Anybody going to say this morning that I'll never be shaken in my faith? And no matter what the enemy does, or no matter how many come against me, what David says, I'll You might move me. You might shake me. Ah, but I'll not be greatly shaken, because I'm waiting upon God. How long, he says, how long will you imagine mischief? But he's just sort of saying, is there no end to this? These men that are coming against him, they imagine mischief. They're attacking. Is there no end to this? You're going to keep on attacking him on. Another translation would be probably an accurate one, I believe, is you're going to keep on battering it. He says, I'm like, it's not that clear in verse 3. It's not that clear in verse 3, but those that are expert in the original text would say, would indicate that it seems to be that the bowing wall and the tottering fence is David making reference to himself. Oh, I might look like I might be leaning. I might be tottering. He's recognizing his own frailty. And in doing so, he's recognizing his need for God. And he sees the attack coming from the enemy as like they're coming with a battering ram. And Boeing. I could take you to a Boeing wall. There's one on the old Analois Road. It was Boeing when I was a boy. It's Boeing today. I tell you, it's still standing. I may be Boeing. You see, it's under pressure. Psalm 37, I think it's verse 23-24, says, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. And then it says this, though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, because the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. Ah, you might move me. You might shake me. I might look like a bowing wall. I might look like I'm going over. I might be like a tottering fence. Ah, but I'm tottering, but I'm not toppled. I'm bowing, but I'm not down. Why? David says, I'm waiting for God. I'm just waiting quietly and silently. I'm looking to God. And the attack comes, the trial comes. Notice what it says, all of you. Verse 3, against a man. He says, ye shall be slain, all of you. And he says, how long will you imagine mischief against a man? All the enemy is outnumbering him. What a trial. They're all coming at him. All of you against one man, he says. You'll be slain, all of you. He's depending upon God. No wonder he feels like a bowing wall. No wonder he feels that he's like a tottering fence. Maybe you're like that this morning. Maybe you're feeling battered and bruised, and bowing. Maybe the pressures of life, you're contending with many difficulties. You know, there are mothers in homes that contend with difficulties day by day. And then there are men out working in difficulties. And maybe in the days in which we live, there are those that are, there are mothers that are also out working. Puts great pressure on daily life. Yes, and trials come and difficulties come and they pound us. And times we feel battered and bruised, and times we think we're going to go over. We're like a bowing wall. And verse 4 says that they're only interested in casting him down from his excellency, and that's a reference to the saint of God. You see, the saint of God is excellent when he's in amongst the worldling. the saint of God, His Excellency, the manner of life of God's people, I tell you, they're on a different plane from the world around them. But they're only, the psalmist says, they only consult, they're only interested in bringing them down. They delight in lies, falsehood. And they bless with their mouth and they curse inwardly, flattery. And the man of the world loves to see the saint of God fall. And the old enemy, the devil, wants to bring us down. The psalmist pauses and he thinks about that. The end of verse 4. Truth, trials. Verse 5, we then come in on the way of triumph. You might think he says it again. My soul, wait thou only upon God. You might think that's a repetition of verse 1, but you know it's slightly different. If verse 1 is maybe more of an aspiration, verse 5 is an absolute. If verse 1 is an ideal that we all must pursue, it's more than ideal. Verse 5 is an imperative. There's a slight variation in the original text, and it's maybe not so noticeable in ours. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. That's verse 1. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. Verse 5, for God alone, oh my soul, wait in silence. It's a must. You want to be able to stand. We dare not neglect this. Waiting upon God, it's a must. Notice, will you, also, verses 5 and 6, they look like they're the same verses repeated again, but there's another slight difference at the end of verse 6. At the end of verse 2, the psalmist says, I shall not be greatly moved. At the end of verse 6, he says, I shall not be moved. There's a big difference. Ah, you might move me. At one time in my life, you might have moved me. Ah, but I've been waiting upon God. And I've got to know my God a bit better than I used to. And he's able to say now, I shall not be moved. When I was a lad, I used to look across church from the annex. And the annex was down here. I looked across church from this side. And I used to often look at Mr. Minnis, Mr. Robert Minnis, who was the elder, one of the elders in church in those days. And I used to think it was easy for him to be a Christian. And it was more difficult for me. I would imagine if I had got to know him and spoke to him more often, I would sooner realize that he's still battling too. Ah, but you make progress, you know. He was way ahead of us. But there's development in this psalm. It's not just a repetition of the same verses. There's a development. There's a time you'll greatly move me. It's possible to move me. Then he says, you'll not move me at all. Waiting upon God. He then says in verse 7, in God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. That verse begins with in God and it finishes with in God. What assurance there is in that verse, verse 7. In God. And then he puts his initials on every title that's given to God. He says it's my salvation and it's my glory and it's my strength and it's my refuge. I think that Spurgeon said that. He brands his initials in every name he gives to God. And with these words of assurance, and from his experience, he's been through trials. He's waited upon God. And he has this assurance. And it's then that he says to the people, trust in him at all times. He knows what he's talking about. Drew Craig, preacher. His father was David Craig, well-known preacher. I think David Craig went home to be with the Lord in 1977. I heard him preach. I was very young then, of course. He used to preach in Ardmore Gospel Hall. I didn't know his son, but I think it's his son that has told us that when he started to preach, Craig said his father gave him a piece of advice: don't traffic unfelt truth. I thought that was good advice. Don't you try to preach something you don't know what it really means. Don't traffic unfelt truth. Unless you felt it, don't you try to tell it. Here's a man. He's not trafficking unfelt truth. He knows what he's talking about. He says this morning, trust in him at all times. Trust in God at all times. Only God. Only God. God alone. Will my soul wait in silence? God alone. That's it. Not looking to man. Trust in him at all times. There's a lovely song and it says, I've had many tears and sorrows. And I've had questions for tomorrow. There's been times I didn't know right from wrong. But in every situation, God gave blessed consolation that my trials came to only make me strong. And through it all, I've learned to trust in Jesus. And I've learned to trust in God. I thank him for the mountains, and I thank him for the valleys, and I thank him for the storms he's brought me through, for if I never had a problem, I'd never known that Christ could solve them. I never knew what faith in God could do. Through it all, I learned to trust in Jesus, and I've learned to trust in God. I know that song so well because I heard my mother sing it so often. This man says, trust in him. At all times. That's it. That's what we need today. We need to trust in him. Verse 8, he goes on to say, men of low degree, they're only vanity. They're just like a breath, so light. And then he says, men of high degree, they're just a lie, they're just a delusion. He says, set them on the scales. And the scales will go up, they're so light. Put them all together and put them in the scales, they're still going up, they're so light. I'm not trusting in men. Couldn't help but think. The Prime Minister of Great Britain retires. And he quotes one of his greatest achievements. He legislated for same-sex marriage. He says he's proud of it. An achievement. My goodness. Incredible. Not trusting the men like that. Light. Only vanity. Men of low degree, men of high degree, it doesn't matter who they are. We're not trusting the men. We're not trusting in oppression, says verse 10. Ill-gotten gains, we're not going to become vain in robbery. If riches increase, we're not going to set our heart upon riches either. No, no. Not trusting in anything like that. We're trusting in God. Trust in him. At all times. That's the text. And governments can come and go, and men can come and go. Trust in him at all times. I was reminded during the week of Harold McCusker, who used to be the MP in Upper Ban. He was a face I used to see on TV, but he was friendly with the manager where I worked, and I used to see him now again as well, but He died early in life. He died at 50 years of age. There are some words on his grave, on his headstone, which is part of a speech that he made. And it's a regret. It's a regret. I think it's sad that that man, you know, such was his conviction, and he felt so strongly and that he even had to have those words put on his headstone. He said something like this: "I carry to my grave with ignominy the sense of injustice that I have done to my constituents down through the years, when in the darkest hour I exhorted the people to put their trust in the British House of Commons." A man says, "I exhorted the people that I represented to put their trust in men and in governments. Aye, even the British Houses of Parliament." And he regretted it. And he says, "I'll carry that regret to my grave." And so he did. The psalmist, he exhorts the people. He says, "Put your trust in God. And trust in Him at all times, in every situation. Trust in God at all times." David, have you any regrets with that piece of advice? Not a bit. He didn't regret coming out of this. Not for one moment did he regret to put his mind and to live his life and then to tell others and exhort others and encourage others, trust in Him at all times. That's the message this morning. Trust in Him at all times. Our closing hymn is 324. 300.